Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us for season 2, episode 3 of our Living Leadership series. My name is Emily Clay, and I am the webinar and podcast producer here in the School of Leadership Studies. And I'm joined today by my co-host, Kelsey Solberg, and our two lovely guests, Marlene Ramsey and Mike Von Baron. And this season is all about building better communities. So each of our podcasts are actually follow-up conversations to live webinars that air on select Wednesdays each month. And during those webinars, we focus on how each of these topics are applied in relation to workplace environments. And during this time, during the podcast, we focus more heavily on how each topic is applied outside of the workplace, in our personal communities, with our friends and family, et cetera. So I also want to take a quick moment to thank our sponsors. We have two platinum presenting sponsors this season, Integris Architecture and STCU, and our two bronze sponsors, Canopy Credit Union and Stevens Clay Law Firm. We couldn't do this without you, and we're so, so thankful for your support of our series. It allows us the opportunity to offer these webinars and podcasts free of charge to our community and to recruit all of these amazing presenters to be here with us. And it's a real testament to each of your organizations that they're willing to invest back in our community in this way. So thank you again to all of our sponsors. So let's get started. Today, we're going to be talking about forgiveness as a relationship building tool. And I'm also joined today, like I mentioned previously, my co-host Kelsey Solberg. So she is the Director of Professional and Community Education in the School of Leadership Studies here at Gonzaga. And I also mentioned Mike and Marlene had a fabulous conversation during our live webinar where they talked about this topic in a workplace setting and how to deal with different aspects of forgiveness and relationship building in the workplace. But we can't wait to use this time to follow up on some of the things they touched on and also talk about how this topic applies to us on a day-to-day basis and in other relationships. So before I go any further, I'm going to introduce our two guests. Marlene Ramsey has worked in a variety of roles in counseling, teaching, and administration at the collegiate level and feels very fortunate to have spent her entire professional career in academia. She retired in December of 2017 from her position as Vice President of Instruction, Chief Academic Officer at Walla Walla Community College. Her primary research interest, which she conducted in South Africa with the Center for the Research of Violence and Reconciliation, focused on the impact of empathy and forgiveness and the relational dynamics between perpetrators and those who extend forgiveness to them. Marlene lives in Washington State and enjoys life with her husband, daughters, son-in-laws, and three grandsons. We're also joined by Mike Van Baron, who lives in Spokane, Washington, where he serves as pastor of Holy Cross Lutheran Church and as vice president for the regional district of its church body. He enjoys volunteering on director boards for nonprofit community organizations and is currently serving on the board of directors for Christian Youth Theater of Spokane. Knowing that healthy communities filled with servant-first leaders bringing a touch of grace to the community, Mike appreciates the opportunity to both learn from and equip leaders for roles of service. He is a doctoral candidate in Gonzaga's doctoral program in leadership studies, and he takes every opportunity he can to enjoy the outdoors, hiking, biking, snowshoeing, camping with his wife, Jennifer, or with his two daughters when they're home from college. So welcome back, you two. Thanks for being here. We have a lot to get to today. Again, I want to start off by saying great job at the webinar. I feel like this topic has so many layers. We could probably talk about it for hours and hours, but as we start to switch gears a little to focus on this topic outside of the workplace, I want to start by talking a little bit about why forgiveness is so important. We'll also dive into types of forgiveness and challenges and even what comes after forgiveness. But in terms of why forgiveness is so important, the first couple of things that came to my mind were the fact that forgiving others can oftentimes free you from any sort of control from the person who may have harmed you or offended you. And in terms of self-forgiveness also, it oftentimes might be more about self-love and learning how to love yourself despite mistakes you've made and how to move on with your life. So I think forgiving yourself can sometimes not have anything to do with anyone else at all and can be equally important. So I'm curious to hear from both of you, just your general opinion to start us off on why you think the idea of practicing forgiveness is so important. Marlene, do you want to start us off?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Emily. I think that's a good place to start because, as I mentioned in the webinar, forgiveness is not an easy topic for most people to talk about. It's always thrilling and wonderful when we read stories about it, but when we ourselves engage in it, we don't see it often demonstrated in our community. You know, the broader world, we seem to be at conflict constantly. I'm talking we as human beings. I'm talking there's many conflicts. So as human beings, inevitably, we meet conflict. And whether it's on a global scale, on a political scale, on a community scale, or just personal, we hurt and harm, or we experience hurt and harm in those ways. Mm-hmm. And so what can we do to come together again? How can we reconcile? How can we live easily again in harmony when we intentionally or unintentionally hurt others? So developing a way of being in terms of, I think Mike and I talked about this, having a generosity of spirit towards others initially, and then developing a practice of having a forgiving spirit, I think is crucial to our day-to-day lives. And forgiveness is the most quintessential, I guess, human behavior interaction that we can do to repair damage and return our, you know, each other, ourselves, and the other, the perpetrator, back into a community of people.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Marlene. It's really the only way to restore community. Any other way you approach conflict, if there's not forgiveness at the center of it, you might be able to address a situation, but you're not going to restore a relationship. You're not going to restore community. You know, Emily, you talked about the importance of self-care in terms of being able to forgive for your own sake, to forgive yourself. But even forgiving other people when they hurt you is self-care too. I really appreciate what Desmond Tutu had to say in No Future Without Forgiveness, when he said that forgiveness is a form of self-interest because anger, resentment, and revenge are corrosive inside the person. So if you're carrying that around, it's just corrosive to your spirit. You can't have the generosity of spirit that Marlene is talking about when you're carrying something corrosive inside. And forgiveness is what releases that. And
Yes.
I love how you refer that so heavily to a community sense, because I think that really, like, forgiveness, in whatever form it's coming or going from, whether that be in a larger community sense or, you know, just within, you know, your best friend or your mom or your sibling or whoever it may be, that really is the way to reconcile community and can make you feel so much better on a day-to-day basis. So,
you know, and just touching on that, Emily, in my work as a counselor over the years, some of the saddest stories, the most painful stories that I heard and worked with people were ones where they were so alienated for years from family members and sometimes they weren't even sure sometimes the event was pretty, you know, traumatic. Mm-hmm. But other times it was just little things that kept building up and kept building up. And they weren't even really sure why, but they hadn't talked to their father in 9 years or their sister in 3 years. And to me, that is very sad, as family is so crucial to our identity and our connection. And, you know, without the ability to develop reconciliation and focus on being able to talk it through, we end up living really, I think, maybe I'm extreme in saying, but rather damaged lives. And unfulfilled in many ways when we are not able to reconcile, whether it's with a family member or, as you said, Emily, friend or colleague.
Right. Yeah. I think for a lot of people, it's always in the back of your mind and you kind of know it, even though maybe it's something you don't think about all the time. So I think that's a great point.
Yes. Yeah.
There was a gentleman that I knew. It wasn't just in the back of his mind. Like, he actually had it tattooed across his back. So he's kind of a rough guy. He was a biker. He liked motorcycles. He repaired motorcycles. He was in a lot of different motorcycle gangs through the years. And he had tattooed from one shoulder to the other shoulder, all the way across his back, the words "unforgiven."
Oh,
and
wow.
And he lived his life with this sort of rough edge where he didn't care what people thought about him or what he did to other people. But I met him at the end of his life. I met him because I was visiting another patient who was a worshiper from our congregation at a physical therapy place. And he happened to be in the bed next to them. And I got to talk to him too. And that started a relationship that lasted about 2.5 years with he and his wife. And he was suffering from cancer and he was going to die. And at the end of his life, living with unforgiveness from other people was really eating him up. And he really wanted to overcome that. And so he was starting to make amends at the end of his life. And he was reconnecting with people, with kids that he hadn't talked to in years. And asking for forgiveness. And he even struggled with it as a pastor. His question for me was, can God forgive me if I've got this tattooed across my back? And with the assurance that God can forgive him, he was able to ask for that forgiveness from other people in his family too. It was just beautiful. Yeah. By the time he had passed away, we did his funeral in his front yard with all of his biker friends there with their motorcycles parked all over the street in the front yard and friends coming up with their coolers. And it was a neat occasion.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful story.
We want to take a moment to give huge thanks to our two presenting sponsors of the Living Leadership Series, STCU and Integris Architecture. At community organizations throughout the Inland Northwest, STCU employees are leading with intentionality and purpose. They are supported by a Spokane-based credit union that provides time off for volunteerism, abundant leadership development opportunities, and tuition reimbursement as part of a generous benefits package. To learn more about joining a team that's here for good, visit STCU.org. A longstanding contributor to Spokane's built environment, Integris Architecture designs buildings that shape the public realm, including schools, libraries, and popular civic spaces like the Podium and the Hive. After recently coming together with YGH Architecture, Integris now has offices in Spokane, Seattle, and Portland, where they continue to extend their impact throughout the Pacific Northwest, building better communities and supporting environmental and social justice in their work and office cultures.
I do feel like we're sort of getting into this a little bit, but, you know, thinking about kind of the different, I don't know if types is the right word, but the different ways that forgiveness can look. So we've talked about self-forgiveness and named that one pretty clearly, but, you know, Marlene, you shared this story about about kind of a community forgiveness, right? So there was this event around that was sort of around someone to forgive them, but it was coming from a community approach or a group approach. And then there's also sort of this, you know, if you're the one offering forgiveness, so being the one on that side or the one that's receiving the forgiveness too. So I think there's all these different threads, and I'd love to just kind of pull those out a little bit more with you too, and hear maybe some examples or how you kind of would differentiate between the different ways that forgiveness can look or be experienced.
Yes, Kelsey, that's excellent. There are different ways of forgiveness, whether you are the person that's harmed or whether you're the perpetrator. And it looks different depending upon, it's very, it's, I don't know, Mike, maybe you might have some insights on this, but for some people, giving forgiveness is easier for them than asking for it. I think so to ask for forgiveness when you have been the person that harmed, that is far more difficult. So when, if you talk about, or if we try to identify these threads of forgiveness, yes, self-forgiveness, but also whether you're extending forgiveness or whether you're receiving forgiveness, they both take different types of strengths, internal strengths. And I think for many people, asking for forgiveness is a very humbling, I don't know if it's humiliating. Sometimes what we've done is very shaming, and to ask for it is an admittance that we have been, you know, we've been a jerk, or we've been a perpetrator, or we've been kind of mean. And it's hard to recognize that we're the bad guys. And I think so asking for forgiveness, I don't know how I would label that, but
it almost feels a little bit selfish in a way. Like, I need you to forgive me, even though I'm the one who wronged you.
Good point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes that bothers a person when somebody comes to them asking for forgiveness, because they're not ready to forgive this person. Who are they to ask?
Right. Mm-hmm.
When I think about some different threads of forgiveness, I think about there's the forgiveness that you give somebody who is acknowledging what they did wrong, and they genuinely feel bad about it. Mm-hmm. They're asking for forgiveness. And so there's one level of forgiveness where you know the person understands that they did wrong. There's a whole nother level of forgiveness when you're forgiving people who aren't yet recognizing what they did wrong. And, mm-hmm. and that is more for self-care mm-hmm. than it is for the other person, because the other person might not receive that because they don't even think they did anything wrong. Right. But as long as you're harboring the resentment, it's corrosive to you. And so there's a need and an importance to forgive them, even when they're not willing to recognize they did anything wrong. And that's for us personally. And then there's another level of that, if we're teasing that out, where sometimes that's even spoken, but other times it's just unspoken. Mm-hmm. It's not there. It's something that I need to personally learn to let go of and forgive, so that there's not tension between me and this other person mm-hmm. anymore. And I'm not carrying it, but I may never speak that forgiveness to them, mm-hmm. but it would be nice if I could, if it came to a point where they're in a place ready to receive it. But until they're in the place ready to receive it, sometimes it comes across, like an attack. Even though it's forgiveness,
Do you think that there's a way to know or be aware ahead of time of whether or not people are ready to forgive you? Do you think there's any sort of anything behind that people can be aware of?
Well, Marlene, I'd like you to weigh in on this, because this really reminds me of the trust feed story with Brian Mitchell, when he found the courage to go to the village the first time. after years later and apologize, and they weren't ready to forgive. And it wasn't until they invited him when they were ready that the healing took place. I don't know. So did you learn anything from that?
Well, yes. What I learned from that, several things come to mind, but with that specific question, Mike, it was about self-forgiveness for him. Mm. And what I learned is that it's very difficult to forgive oneself until, you know, he said he knew God had forgiven him. And that's wonderful to feel that peace as he shared that story with me. But he said, God forgave me, but it was very difficult for me to forgive myself until the people of TrustBeat extended that to me. And so as human beings, and because we're social beings and we interact, it's very difficult to forgive oneself without getting that generosity from the one we harmed. Doesn't mean we can't, but I have found it's much more difficult.
Well, how important do you think it is to be ready to forgive or forgive someone even if you're not ready to forgive? Do you think that it's okay to offer forgiveness even if maybe you're not ready, just because you know that that will like help the other person in the long run?
Well, may I speak to that? Mm-hmm. So in my research, there was a young man who was involved in the St. James Massacre in Cape Town, where he and his militants, and they were, you know, opposing the apartheid government, they killed 11 people within that church. And he was found guilty of those murders, was sent to prison. And then when the Truth and Reconciliation Commission was formed, he was given the opportunity for political amnesty under the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And he told me that during that truth-telling, which was very public in Cape Town, he asked to meet with some of the church members, family members of people he had killed, had been part of that massacre. And he said he had chains on his hands, chains on his feet, and they were in a circle. And he asked forgiveness of each of them. I think there were about 15 people from the church there. And they shook his hand, and he said, Their voices and mouths told me they forgave me, but their eyes told me they didn't. Mm. And so, you know, I do think that there is that sense of heart to heart where you know when it's a sincere apology and a sincere acceptance of that apology. Mm-hmm. And what I found that, and you know, Mike, you may be able to address this even better than I, because I don't want to come across as making a generalization, but it seems to me in my acquaintances and work with truly devout religious people, they feel duty bound to forgive because God asks us to forgive. But a number of them have said, you know, I tell them I forgive them, but in my heart, I'm still angry. So, you know, I do think there is, you know, an important aspect to coming to forgiveness. And it's not easy for most of us and very difficult for many of us. Some people seem to come to forgiveness much more easily. I've seen that. But the vast majority of us, just coming to forgiveness is very, very difficult.
Yeah, I mean, especially when that bad of things have happened to you, you know, like losing a loved one or something like that. Like that can be one of the hardest things to forgive in terms of, yes. You know. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Well, Mike, it was earlier when you kind of made that distinction between, and it was something that I was sort of thinking about as Marlene was speaking, but that sense of, you know, when this added layer of forgiving someone else, whether or not you can have a conversation, whether or not they accept it, but it's that it's complicated because you might want to forgive and you might want to have that release and that healing for yourself. You know, I'm thinking about people who have had complicated relationships with family members who might have passed away, and they're working now through forgiving this person, knowing that they won't be able to have a conversation with them. But they're doing that, going through that process for themselves. But it can't be so simple as just deciding to forgive. Like it is, I think it like lives in our bodies in so many ways too. And so it just is it's a complicated, and I imagine kind of long process too, that does look different for everyone.
Yeah, I think you're right. We talked about this a little bit in the webinar too, but I think it really does go back to our sense of what kind of justice are we looking for out of this? And if the sense of justice is for the person who hurt me to sort of hurt as much as I hurt, then it's hard to come to a place of forgiveness until we see that justice take place. But if our sense of justice is we are hurting because the relationship's broken and we're longing to see the justice of a relationship restored, then that moves us to a place where we can be more willing to forgive, because the only way that can happen is from letting go of my anger. Whereas if you have the other sense of justice, then the only way justice can be served is if I keep my anger until they figure out what they did wrong. Until they pay for what they did wrong. And so I think sometimes it's having to retool our whole understanding of what justice means. Mm-hmm. What am I looking for out of this?
Yeah, I was talking to Kelsey a little bit about this before we hopped on, about how moving on from, you know, if you don't necessarily want to forgive someone, but the fact of just like moving on and being able to live your life free from that is something that will give you the power over the person who may have hurt you. And, you know, in some circumstances, if you're not moving on, then you're just leaving the power in the person's court that did hurt you. So I think that there's a lot of strength in that, but just the idea that like moving on is only going to be good for yourself and not for, you know, anyone else. So I think we're already kind of getting into this a little bit, but I want to talk about challenges of forgiveness now that we've kind of gone through all of the different types of forgiveness. And I think forgiveness in any sense can be quite challenging for a lot of people. But there's a couple examples that Kelsey and I wanted to talk about. And you both talked a lot in the webinar about how important it is to go into conversations surrounding forgiveness without being accusatory of others, and how important that mindset is before you even start a conversation about forgiveness. But I was also thinking about how there's circumstances where you want to forgive a person without necessarily excusing their behavior, and how difficult that can be to not come across as accusatory. So I'm curious how you can forgive behavior that you don't want to excuse without being accusatory, and how to make sure that person can take accountability for their actions without being accusatory. And maybe you don't think that forgiveness needs to coincide with accountability, but I'm curious of your thoughts on that.
Well, that is a really difficult area to pull apart. As a counselor, I worked with women who had been sexually abused. Mm. And one of the things that I never asked of them, I know other therapists and counselors have done very intentional forgiving, like asking them to intentionally forgive. But that didn't seem to be something that I felt was appropriate for me to ask the women who talked with me about those experiences. I would say that this would be one way they could, to let go, because Hannah Arendt says that if we are not, that forgiveness allows us to reverse the irreversible, to, you know, otherwise we're locked with the perpetrator. But if we are able to forgive them, we cut those chains that tie us to that deed or that experience. So I think that is the goal to come to, but it does take time, and I'm not sure that people can always propel themselves to do that. And I think that it's a very personal journey to do that, that level of forgiving. And I don't always think that forgiving is co-aligns or lives with forgetting, because sometimes we can't forgive. Or women who maybe are in domestic violence situations, you know, the husband or the partner, doesn't have to be a husband, it could be a wife, is, you know, abuses verbally or otherwise. And if you keep saying you forgive them and they keep behaving in the same ways that are harmful, it does not create that kind of reconciliation. So along with that, there has to be some accountability. But I think that is possible. I have seen it happen in very, very, very tragic situations where they were able to come to forgiveness without actually continuing to even have a relationship with their perpetrator, which was a family member. So I do think it's possible. I know it's possible, but it is very challenging to do, but at times quite necessary.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that speaks to the difference between types of forgiveness that is necessary for me to move on and heal as the person who's been harmed, and forgiveness that's necessary to restore the relationship with the person who harmed me. And I think you're touching on something really curious there, Marlene, that I think is important to notice, that distinction that forgiveness doesn't always mean that I have a restored, healthy relationship with the person who harmed me.
Yes.
But it means I'm no longer carrying and harboring the resentment for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think about something that Martin Luther King Jr. wrote in Strength for Love. He said that forgiveness isn't putting a false label on an evil act, but forgiveness is not letting that act become a barrier in my life any longer.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in that sense, you know, we can still forgive, even if we don't feel ready for it, because it's so important for us and for our own soul.
Mm-hmm.
But that part about restoring a relationship with the person who hurt us, that's a next step.
I love how you differentiated those two things.
I mean, if it's an abusive spouse, if it's a abusive relationship, then you may not be able to reconcile. That's mm-hmm. That has to do with trust and trust building, and there's a lot more to that than just the forgiveness.
Right.
Yeah, important distinction. One of the things that I've been thinking about too is forgiveness. So I grew up Catholic, and so I think about forgiveness in this religious context. Like, that's how I understood it growing up. And I do think that there is some of that perception that this is kind of a spiritual or religious word or practice even. And so I'm curious about, how do we secularize forgiveness? Like, how do we make this approachable, maybe not approachable, but more in everyday life, maybe that people are living in. Mike, I see you smiling, but I'm curious about how do we make it more secular? I don't know.
Well, It is interesting because social scientists have really been studying and researching forgiveness now for probably close to 30, began in the 80s, where there was more, concentrated effort in looking at the benefits of forgiving in a therapeutic sense, and also physical and emotional as well. But of course, the concept is, you know, talked about in the Bible. It's shared with Christ, when the disciples talked about forgiving, and he shared how we should forgive. And so I think because we are human beings, we're spiritual beings, but we're also, you know, secular beings. We have many aspects to our side, sides of us, that we need to realize that it's not a religious thing to forgive. It's a part of the sacred texts and many of the sacred texts, you know, that concept of forgiveness is found. But it's also because we are social animals. We are social beings. We flourish in community. We support and sustain each other. And when we are cut off from that, it is very devastating to us. I mean, literally, in, you know, maybe in the more nomadic early, if you were cut off from your clan, the potential of surviving was reduced significantly. So being a part of that community, and now we live in a very high tech, very industrialized community. But being ostracized from that community of others is devastating in so many ways. So what is the bridge? Well, not even from a spiritual sense, but from a very secular sense, the bridge is the ability to reconcile together or to forgive. So I think forgiveness has a very religious, deeply spiritual aspect to it, but I also think it has a very deeply secular in terms of community building. And I'm not sure if everyone shares that view, but what are your thoughts, Mike?
Yeah, I think so. I was smiling when you said it, because we had in the webinar made reference to Hannah Arendt several times, and she's ethnically Jewish, I believe, and is not particularly spiritual. But it's interesting when she's talking about forgiveness, she talks about Jesus of Nazareth as sort of the discoverer of the role of forgiveness in the realm of human affairs, and then goes on to say that, and this stuck with me as a Christian pastor, because she said the fact that he articulated that in a religious context, in a religious language, should not stop us from using it in the secular sense. I thought that was really insightful. That it's just kind of what you were saying, Kelsey, that many of us know this from our church world upbringing or whatever, but we don't bring it into the secular place of the office. But that shouldn't stop us. I think what often can help us get into that is just using the language. When somebody says, "I'm sorry," do you say, "I forgive you"? Or do you say, "It's okay, don't worry about it. It's not a big deal"? Because I think sometimes we think that forgiveness is what is sort of not acknowledging the depth of the wrong. But actually what fails to acknowledge it is when we say it wasn't a big deal or don't worry about it. Yes. Well, if it wasn't something to worry about, I wouldn't be hurt about it. And if it wasn't a big deal, I wouldn't be hurt about it. But when you say, "I forgive you," you're recognizing that, yeah, something wrong happened here. But I'm not going to hold it over you, and I'm not going to stew on it. So I think when I'm working with families and kids, I encourage them to use those words with their kids. When do you teach your kids to say "I'm sorry"? Like, do you teach them to say "I forgive you" to the people who say "I'm sorry"? Mm-hmm. And then husbands and wives, when I'm doing premarital counseling, we always have a conversation about conflict resolution, and the last step in the conflict resolution cycle is sharing and receiving words of forgiveness. And most of the couples I talk to, don't have a practice of that beforehand. They have a practice of working out conflict in some way, but mm-hmm. it doesn't always end with expressing forgiveness to one another in those words. I forgive you. I forgive you too.
Yeah, I think that can be really powerful and really easily forgotten. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, and may I just tag on to something Mike said? I think it was so important that you brought forward that, do we teach our kids to do this? Mm-hmm. Because children, I think, benefit greatly if they grow up in an environment where they understand that forgiveness is a powerful way of reconnecting. And I had a very funny little experience last summer. My youngest grandson, who is 9 years old, was playing Little League. And he was watching his older brother play, and very hungry, because, you know, it's, you know, they're always hungry when they're that age. And so I reached into my pocket and I had a candy bar and I just handed it to him. And he started to eat it. And his mother, who is very health conscious, my daughter, by the way, said, "Mother, don't be giving him that. It's, you know, he hasn't had dinner yet and he won't eat well. And I don't want him eating that candy bar." And so I said to him, I said, Liam, I'm so sorry, but I don't think this is a good idea. And I said, maybe you better just tuck that away for after dinner. And he looks up at me with his big eyes and he said, "I forgive you, Grandma." And he very dutifully did that. It made me smile because, you know, I was thinking I was going to have a big argument with him about putting away, you know, it's just a small thing. But I love the fact that he uses that language and understands that, you know, it doesn't always go his way, and that if someone has harmed him, that he is generous enough to say, "I forgive you."
I love that. Well, I feel like we've talked about why forgiveness is important, and we've talked about different types of forgiveness and challenges of forgiveness. But I want to talk a little bit about what comes after forgiveness to close out our podcast today. I know we've touched on it a little bit kind of throughout today, but how are you expected to just move on from either being forgiven or especially from forgiving? And what can you do? What do you do after that process, I guess, to heal yourself and really truly be able to move on?
Great question. I think there's definitely a trust building process that needs to take place afterwards. And that's a slow process. So if it's a very significant hurt, you've been abused or something like that, and the relationship with that person is not and should not continue, there's still an element of learning to trust other people again, because you're always going to carry this fear that somebody else could do that to you. Mm-hmm. So it's learning to trust people. If it's a relationship where you are continuing in a relationship with that person, this is somebody in your family, whatever, there's trust building with that family member. That just because I've said I forgive you doesn't mean I can trust you completely in the way I did before this happened. But it doesn't mean I want to get to that place, and I want to work on that trust between us. And so there's a lot of relational work that needs to take place even after forgiveness of them.
Yeah. It's not exactly the flip of a switch, but the door is open.
And I think that's one of the things that keeps people from wanting to forgive, is they feel like, well, if I forgive them, it means I have to act like this never happened. Mm. And I don't think that's the case. If you can decouple those and recognize that the trust building is a whole different step, you can forgive. And I can let go of the wanting to be angry about it, because I don't have to feel like it never happened. I can recognize that the relationship's going to take time to restore, and that's okay.
Well, I think, Mike, you make a good point about being able to let it go. And I would just like to share a story of my own family. My parents, my mother's 96 and my father's 98, and he just passed away on October 1st. But they divorced years ago. I think my mother was maybe early 40s. They were, so it had been 50 years. And they didn't live far away from each other, but there was a lot of pain there throughout those years. And they both remarried and lost their partners. And about 5 years ago, my dad was just in his like early 90s at this point. I began, when I would go down to visit with my mother, I began inviting my dad to come and have food with us, like a midday meal on a Sunday or something like that. And at first he declined, and mother was a little uncomfortable with it. But about 4 years ago, he began doing that. And over the years, they began looking forward to that, and things began to thaw a bit. And maybe it was their age, you know, but my brother and I, they all live in the same town. I live in Washington, they live in Oregon, but they began, we'd all get together and I would fix food and we would be together and have collegial and very, you know, nice times together. It felt good to be a family again. And then in September, when my mother had her 96th birthday, we had her birthday. It was a beautiful, you know, we've had a beautiful fall. We had her dinner underneath the tree in her front yard, and a very, very lovely time together. And when my dad left that day, he gave my mom a really big hug. And she just kept, you know, they never said to each other, you know, you hurt me and all this, but things thawed a bit. He gave her a big hug. She said, he's never given me a hug like that. And she just kept talking about that. Oh. Well, he passed away on October 1st in an accident. He was at 98. He still liked to go hunting, and he was riding his little on his property, and it turned over, his little side by side, and we lost him. But she kept saying, well, I feel like your dad and I kind of healed. Mm-hmm. And so I share this story because I do think it's something that you have to, it takes time, and you have to be intentional about making times to be together. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully you can come to that kind of reconciliation.
How beautiful for your mom.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Now that relationship's been healed after so many years.
Yes. Thank you, Mike. I think it is been wonderful, because prior to this, it's always been stories of how much he hurt her. And I don't hear that now. It's just, so that has been a really very beautiful thing for our family. And I'm glad that they had that time together.
Yeah. Well,
I don't mean to take this in another direction, but it also speaks to gestures of forgiveness.
I was just going to say nonverbal forgiveness is like a whole nother topic we could talk about, but
yes.
Yeah.
I was thinking about one of those too. And it's just quick. I'm going to be sharing in a funeral tomorrow for a family who, a daughter, it was a family that had a child die in the family when there were three kids in the family, and one of the sons died of cancer at a very young age, while the other two siblings were young as well. And it so changed the dynamic of the family. And there was so much grief in the family that the other two kids, as they grew up, really felt sort of slighted, because they didn't sort of have their parents anymore. Their parents were grieving the rest of their childhood. Mm-hmm. You know, it takes years to get over something like that. And so they felt like they lost their parents in the process. And this daughter that just feels like she's been carrying a lot of that burden and pain since then. that she had sort of lost her parents at that age. And they had good relationship through the years after that. But just that childhood time frame. So when he was dying, he wasn't able to speak anymore, her dad, and she went to his bedside and just felt like it was time to tell him that she forgave him. And when she was telling me the story, I asked if she minded if I shared that at the service. She said, no, you can share it. And I asked, well, how did he respond? Well, he couldn't talk anymore. And he wasn't a particularly touchy person. He expressed his love in other ways. But she said, when she said that to him, that she forgave him for that, he reached out and took her hand and he held her hand while she was talking. And then when she finished talking, so I asked, how did he respond? And he said, well, he couldn't say anything, but I know he responded because he took my hand and he spun my hand. They were holding hands clasped, like a handshake kind of. And she said, he spun my hand so that he interlaced his fingers with my fingers and squeezed.
Aww.
He said, so.
Yeah.
So I felt like he was forgiving me too, is what she said.
Aww.
It was beautiful.
Aww. That's so cute.
Amazing story.
But what your story reminded me of that, Marlon.
Yeah.
So a gesture of forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. So powerful. Beautiful. Yeah. Thank you both so much for sharing so many stories from your own lives and lives of the people that you're touching. And I, like Emily said at the beginning, this feels like something we could talk about for so long. So just very grateful for your time and energy in this conversation. And we do like to leave things on a, with some levity. Yeah. So I'd love to just, one question. So just like a one word answer to a question of what's making you feel most energized right now. Just a one word.
Snow. I love winter. It's
great. Thanks, Mike.
Wow. One word, music. Mm. Music, Christmas music.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's two words, but
we'll let it slide. We forgive you, Marley.
What about you, Kaylee, Emily? One word?
I would probably say the holidays, just giving me some, good energy right now for sure.
Rest.
Yeah. Love that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to reiterate my thanks to both of you for being willing to participate in this with us today. Super grateful that you were able to do this and that I could meet both of you for the first time. And Kelsey and I definitely both feel super lucky that we got to have this conversation with you. So thank you so much. And I also just want to give a little info for everybody listening that if you haven't watched Mike and Marlene's webinar, you can do that on our website, gonzaga.edu/webinars. And you can also register for the next topic on there. On January 11th, we'll be talking about authentic leadership in action. We're going to be joined by Tara Weir, who was actually involved in hosting our podcast last season. So we're super excited to have her back, and she will have a co-presenter with her as well. TBD on who that is, but go to that same URL, gonzaga.edu. You can register there. You can watch all the prior webinars, all the prior podcasts, all of that on that page. So wishing everybody a super happy holidays, and we can't wait to see you all in January.